Long before his rise to cult fandom on University Challenge, Bobby Seagull was obsessed with numbers. And a bit like me, actually, I was obsessed a bit with numbers at school, but he's actually done much better than I have out of numbers. And I'm delighted to talk to him about his new book called The Life-Changing Magic of Numbers. Bobby Seagull, welcome to the show. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Now, did that record I just played mean anything to you?
It sounded 70s, 80s.
Do you know what the album is called that that record came from?
Oh, yeah. Things are on University Challenge. I consider myself to have a good range of music knowledge, classical and pop, but this might have squeezed me out. I might need to nominate someone first.
Well, no, because this one has a very, very personal meaning for you. If I tell you that that was an entire album by Neil Diamond called Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
You're quite right. Someone did mention this to me recently, and I was like, I need to get a copy of that for Christmas. That's a Christmas gift, then.
There you are. He made a whole album which was based on a book, which is why you ended up apparently being called Bobby Seagull.
Yes, quite literally, because my dad read that book in the 70s, and it's about a seagull, Jonathan Livingston, who decided he would just sort of come above the average fish routine of eat fish, wake up, sleep, and try and inspire others to flight. And since then, since birth, my surname has been Seagull.
How amazing. It's not one of Neil's finest moments, I have to say, but, you know, an interesting story nonetheless.
Yes, I agree.
So, you've always been obsessed with numbers. I loved maths at school. I mean, I talk to people now and I say that, and they look at me like I've got some kind of weird thing going on. But I loved maths at school, and clearly you did as well.
Yes, I think for me, I found that maths gave me a bit of sort of certainty and comfort. You know, we have those days where, you know, our tea is cold and we drop our toast and the hot water's not working. But with maths, so 8 times 7 is always going to be 56, no matter what sort of day you had. And my personal story is how football actually got me into maths in particular. As I remember, do you remember the stickers, Panini stickers?
Yes.
So my friends and I used to collect them, but a lot of friends would speculate about who their favourite footballer was, who the best footballers were. They would say, like, Ian Wright is better than Matt Letizier. But I had all the data from the sticker book input into a database at home. So, like, age, height, goal scored, left foot, right foot, penalties. And then I'd come back the next day, having interrogated the data, and say, actually, you may have said that Ian Wright's better than Matt Letizia, but Matt Letizia has a 99%, oh, he had actually 100% conversion rate and penalty kicks, so more reliable in circumstances. So it gave me a grounding to establish my conversations, and it made me feel confident. Like, if I was good at numbers, I could actually have a real opinion.
Wow, how interesting. And you use those numbers, I guess, in the job as a trader in the city.
Yes. So back in 2006 to 2008, I actually started, you know, back then, the heady days of finance where people, there was a sort of gravy train of people moving into the city. I found myself playing, it was almost like a virtual reality game with lots of screens, telephones, shouting. And ultimately, you didn't realize that you're playing with millions every day, but actually it was all about numbers. And again, I found, I'm pretty good at this numbers gig.
Unfortunately, your bosses weren't, were they?
No. Of all the banks I could have picked, you know, I could have picked Barclays or JP Morgan, anyone else. And I picked Lehman Brothers, you know, of all the banks I could have picked.
Oh, dear, dear. So I guess that day, Monday, September the 15th, still haunts you.
Yes, I remember that day my younger brother had bought a shopping trolley to work. So I could take all my items home rather than in a box, you know, which is undignifying and not great for your back. And I discuss it more in my book, but it just gave me that sense of, I can walk out dignified with a shopping trolley with all my belongings.
Well, so after that then, what was your career progression?
Yes. So I actually, for a time, I stayed in finance itself. So I went and qualified as a chartered accountant. So, you know, qualified to do your books or your tax accounts if you ever need. Seagull at your service. But then in 2013, 2014, I moved into education. Because at PwC, when I was an accountant, I really loved tutoring the new graduates. And then I realized actually my passion and my skill set best lay in supporting others and teaching others about maths. So then I moved to Cambridge, did my PGCE teacher training, my master's there, where I got into University Challenge. And then obviously since then, I'm still a part-time maths teacher doing a doctorate at Cambridge, but also I get the chance to do things like have a TV series and write a book about my passion for mathematics. So that's why I'm talking to you today.
Wonderful. Now, obviously that was a pivotal moment when you went on University Challenge. I believe you'd never actually even seen it, had you?
Yes. People always find this quite shocking, but... You know, I knew the cultural significance of a show that's been on since 1962. But like many of the public, I'm someone that's curious. I'd read a lot, but I'd switch on the show and I'd turn on whenever there's biochemistry or something, and I'd go, "What, ammonium nitrate sulfide? What?" And I'd just switch over the channel, and I think I'd watch maybe a cumulative 2 minutes in my entire life. But then at Cambridge, we did like a entrance quiz, and like, oh, actually, I'm quite good at this. And I got onto the team, got onto the show. And then, now I'm an addict. Now Monday, 8 o'clock, no one can ever disturb me. I'm always watching. But before then, no, I've never seen an episode.
It was very funny in the old days. I don't know if they still have it in the Universe Challenge now, but I used to, when Bamba Gascoigne used to present it, I used to wonder how that they managed to put those people above the people below them and how they were held up. And I could never work out why there was like one team was above the other one. But of course they weren't. It was the camera that was doing it.
Oh, I'll give you a great fact, though. In 1986-87, they actually did put teams on top of each other.
Did they?
Yes. Audience figures were falling, and they really needed to revamp the format. And they actually legitimately, for two seasons, had teams on top of each other. But for the rest of the 60 years, it's never been that. It's been side by side.
How funny. Now, why is it, then, do you think that you became notorious with Mr. Monkman on that particular show? What was it about you two?
Yes, I think it's our opposing personalities and the fact that we were friends. So Eric, obviously, I think, I consider myself to have a really wide range of knowledge, but Eric's academic knowledge is something to behold. Mm. So people are enthralled by him. You know, he was barking out answers with sort of real certainty repeatedly across matches. And myself, I had a lot of knowledge, but I think it was my gregarious way of including my teammates. Even now, I get people coming up to me when I do my book talks saying, "I love the way you captained your team. You really got the best out of everyone." And I always think, that it shows that there's a teacher in my blood, because I'm always good at motivating, supporting others and getting the best out of them. So I always think as an individual, you can do a lot, but with the support of others, you can achieve so much more.
Absolutely. Well, you did become kind of famous on the back of that. You ended up doing a show with Monkman, in fact, and the book you've got now, The Life-Changing Magic of Numbers, this has got a lot to do with your kind of philosophy in how you teach. And I love what you're saying, and that's that we're in a bit of a crisis, aren't we, at the moment, because maths and arithmetic is simply not cool anymore, and kids don't know enough these days to get them through life.
That's so true, and I think in the UK in particular, we have a really negative cultural attitude where people will say with a badge of honour, like, "I can't do maths," but you never hear people saying, "I can't read." I mean, that would be shocking, and likewise, we should be shocked by people saying they can't do maths at all. And I think it is getting better in the country, but not quickly enough, and I'm hoping I can, my book is almost like my first. Imagine my life's like a three-course meal. This is my starter for 10. Haha.
Very good.
I came up with that this morning.
I love it. I always thought it was a little odd that it was called the three R's at school: reading, writing, and arithmetic. Because actually, it's R, W, and A. I always thought that was really.
I know. But R, W, and A stands. That could be war. War's not a very good thing.
Now, what you've done is what my teachers never did. So, for example, I remember, and I've banged on about this on the show before, I'm probably the only person in the world who remembers from school the formula for solving a quadratic equation. Now, I've got to tell you, Bobby, I've never even remotely come close to that being in any way useful to me.
Yeah, okay. I'll admit, there are certain parts of mathematics which are just intrinsically of merit themselves. Although the quadratic equation is used by people working out trajectories. So imagine you're shooting a cannonball or working out the movement of a football. That actually uses the quadratic equation.
Jolly good.
But obviously, we don't use it on a day-to-day basis. But I would say is that one, maths allows you to appreciate the world. So that's a sort of intrinsic merit. But I think practically, lots of people, when they're handling their day-to-day finances, they're budgeting or looking at a holiday foreign exchange, they get very confused. Yeah. And that's because they had that negative experience. So obviously, I, in an ideal world, I want people to appreciate the beauty of mathematics, but I definitely want people to feel comfortable so that they can handle numbers on a day-to-day basis.
So are you saying then that next time I go to play golf, I could actually use a quadratic equation formula before I take my shot?
In theory, like Wayne Rooney, when he takes a free kick of Ronaldo, their balls are being... the footballs are being...
steady.
Yes. Their footballs are tracing the path of a quadratic equation. So
no.
Maybe they don't realise it, but in their head, they're solving a quadratic equation.
Wow. Well, mine in golf certainly doesn't. It just trickles along the ground into the bushes. So that's... Now, when you're teaching, you say things like, for example, you know, do you want to learn the formula for this and the formula for that? You say, do you want to be not confused the next time you go into a shop and there's, you know, a discount given off it? And things like APR. People go, oh, yeah, I'm going to go and take out a loan. It's 18.7% APR. I don't know what it means, but I'll take it out anyway. Those are the reasons we ought to learn maths, aren't they?
Yeah, so again, there are some teachers that will say, oh, Mr. Seagull, you know, we should only just spread maths for maths' sake. I can see what they're saying. Like, when we learn Shakespeare, there doesn't have to be a utility. But I think with maths, there really is a utility. And we shouldn't be ashamed of talking about the pragmatic nature of how maths can help people function if you go to, you know, a shop, any sort of sports shop, and these discounts say up to 80% off. But I told my kids, it says up to 80%, but actually it's only 40%.
Yeah.
But by saying up to 80%, they're not technically lying, so they're just deceiving you a little bit. So people really need to understand numbers so they don't get hoodwinked in the world.
Do you think that technology has made it better or worse? I mean, I remember I wasn't allowed to take a calculator into my A-level maths exam. I remember that very well. The calculators were very basic then. I think it was a Sinclair Scientific or something like that. But now, I mean, people just go on their phones and they can find out anything they like and they can do any calculation they like. Is that what's going wrong as well?
So I think with this, it's great that we've got technology that allows us to make calculations. But the problem is a lot of school children in particular still don't have that basic common sense with numbers.
Yeah.
Like I remember with my school kids, we did a data task where we had to work out the average height of kids in the class. And that all you do is add up all the heights divided by the number of students. And one of my students came up with, he did it really quickly and said, oh, sir, put his hand up and said, oh, the average height of a child in this class is 3.70 meters. And I said, whoa, take a step back. How tall is 3.70 meters? So they'd obviously tapped in something, made a mistake, but yeah, Hadn't realized it. And had they just thought about our door is 2 meters high, our ceiling is 4 meters,
yeah,
you know, 3.70 is a bit extreme.
It is. And what's that? Yeah. So in old money, that's about 7 feet. So hang on, 3 meters, that says 9 feet, 10 feet. Ten feet?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
And do you think in classes now people still have to learn their times table? I don't know, because I haven't been to school for such a long time, and long division and all that kind of stuff. Has that disappeared now from curriculum?
It's changing, but there's still a basic need for numeracy, because again, when you're having a negotiation or you're having a chat with a friend or you're looking at things in a supermarket, you're not always getting your phone out. You need a number sense. Like, it doesn't have to be too complicated. If you see like a can of beans is 25p and you're thinking, oh, 8 cans, you don't need to get your calculator every time. It's just, oh, 8 times 25, yeah, £1, £2. I think it's that number sense. And then obviously you can use a calculator to check it. But I think with schools, they are changing. They're less reliant on learning things off by heart, which is perhaps why we're suffering a bit, because I don't like the old Victorian style method of teaching where teacher sits there, tells the kids they have to learn this, and that's what they do, almost like a Dickensian novel. But I think we've almost flipped too far the other way. You know, we're all about the soft skills, but actually kids need to learn their basic things like times tables. And then from there, they can develop their creativity and really understand what sort of numbers mean in the big sense. But without the basic facts, it's very hard to be creative, I think.
I think you're probably absolutely right on that. And the book, The Life-Changing Magic of Numbers, says it all, really. It is life-changing. And for people who can be bothered to learn it, it makes your path through life a little smoother, doesn't it, Bobby?
Yes, I think even for me, like I have one chapter where, you know, all of us, most of us at some stage want to meet a romantic partner, date, married, kids, all that. And I even have like a chapter where I talk about how mathematics has helped me to make sense of why I'm not being successful,
yeah,
and what I need to do. It's just like, it just gives a different perspective, because I think most of us have like a political perspective or a socioeconomic perspective on things happening in the world. But I think we mustn't ignore that maths and numbers can give us another perspective. So it just adds to our armory of how we can understand the world.
Absolutely. And what about you now then, Bobby? I mean, are you still doing part-time teaching?
Yeah, so Yes, I add them on. So this term I'm teaching, last year I was teaching 4 days a week in a state school. This year, because things are a bit crazy, I teach every Monday. So we're in half term, and I spend a couple of days a week trying to do research on my doctorate. So as part of it's understanding mathematics anxiety, relationship with the media, and how maths is portrayed more generally. And then I do a couple of days a week now at the moment. I'm actually off to Wales near Wales this afternoon to promote my book. So, and then also hopefully developing new TV ideas as well. So Monkman and Seagull wasn't the last you've seen of us.
Fantastic. Well, I love your enthusiasm for numbers. It's been lovely to talk to you today, Bobby.
Thank you so much.
The Life-Changing Magic of Numbers by Bobby Seagull. And I think that's probably the only opportunity I've ever had in a 35-year radio career to play a track from Jonathan Livingston Seagull, because it was so rubbish at the time, I thought I'd never be able to play it on the radio. But there we are. Great to talk to you today, Bobby. All the best.
Thank you so much.
All the best. Bye-bye.